The following lecture is given by His Holiness Bhakti Vikas Swami at Sri Sri Radha Syam Sundar Temple, ISKCON, Baroda, Gujarat, India, on 23rd February 2002. The topic is The Message to the Youth of India.
Om Agyanati Niranthasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna. I've been invited to speak to the youth tonight on the subject of a message to the youth of India. Of course, we have several non-youths here also. I think it's a little too loud. Is it all right? But actually, the first lesson of genuine spiritual knowledge, that means according to Bhagavad Gita, is that anyway the soul is not young or old. So actually we're not a youth or a non-youth. You're neither young nor old. Najayate mriyate va kadachin nayang bhutva bhavita vana bhuyaha ajo nityam shashvato yang purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that for the soul there is not birth nor death, nor does he ever come into being, nor does he ever cease to exist. He is eternal, ever existing, primeval, undying. When the body is killed, the soul is not killed. So actually, the soul is neither young nor old. And then if we understand that we're going from body to body to body, then in this life you may be an Indian, but in your previous life you might have been a Pakistani, or you might have been on the moon, or you might have been a fish swimming in the ocean. There are 84 lakh species of life. But the soul doesn't belong to any of them, because the soul is separate from the body. Sango hi ayam purusha. The soul is not the body. That's the first lesson of spiritual life. And bhakti really begins when we understand this fact. Sarva padhi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. A definition of bhakti is that when we are freed from all upadhis, that means designations, and our consciousness is completely purified, and when we engage our senses in the service of the master of the senses, namely Krishna, Rishikesh, that is called bhakti. So bhakti means to come to the transcendental position beyond designations. Designation means that a title is put on someone, but the title doesn't intrinsically belong to them. Just like someone may have a title, Prime Minister of India. But that title, that designation that he has, that's only temporary. Because he won't be the Prime Minister of India forever. It's only for some time. So you may say that, alright, Prime Minister of India, but then his real fixed position is that he's Atal Bihari Vajpayee, who's the present Prime Minister. And even when he ceases to be Prime Minister, of course he's quite old, he might pass away in the post, you never know, but if he ceases to be Prime Minister, he'll still remain Atal Bihari Vajpayee, but he won't be Prime Minister of India. But there will also come a time when he won't be Atal Bihari Vajpayee, because he'll have to give up his body. So the designation, Prime Minister of India, that is temporary. But the designation, the name we have, there are so many different names. You may be, just like someone could be called Sunil Vyas, for instance. So you may think, oh, that's his name, that's who he is. And then, in course of time, you get some designations. That now he's what are you doing? I'm a student in the 9th grade, young boy. Oh, and then, now I'm an engineering student. And now I'm an engineer in such and such a company. And I'm a Gujarati and I'm from this caste. These are all designations concerned with the body. Even the name, just like you have some name, Sunil Vyas. That is a designation which goes with the body. But when the body dies, then that you are Gujarati, Brahmin caste, or you're an engineer, or whatever it may be, that's all finished. So then we may wonder, why are we giving a lecture, a message to the youth of India, when our topic is adhyatmic, our subject is to do with the soul. So why for the youth of India? Why not just for everybody? Well, actually, our message is for everybody. And the message is that you are not a youth, you're not Indian, you're not a non-youth, you're not non-Indian. Whatever your apparent designations may be, we are all eternal servants of Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And forgetting that, we are suffering in this material world. Now, I've written a book called A Message to the Youth of India. So then again, you may wonder, well, now I'm saying there's no message to the youth of India, it's the same message to everybody. And then again, I've written a book, so there must be some special message to the youth of India. Yeah, there is something special, because although we are not the body, we're not Indian or non-Indian, we're not young or old or educated or uneducated, these are all temporary accruements which we pick up. But some circumstances are more favorable for acquiring Krishna bhakti, which is the goal of life. Some circumstances are more favorable than others. Now, in general, it's understood that the human form of life is more favorable for understanding Krishna, or for understanding spiritual life in general. That's not difficult to understand. You are humans, you are listening to this lecture because you have some interest in spiritual life. But it would be very difficult to bring a group of dogs and speak to them about spiritual life. I mean, even some people, they can imitate the sounds of dogs. So they can make different... But even if you can speak dog language, it's very difficult to communicate to a dog that he's not the body and he's an eternal servant of Krishna. He is. Actually, the dog, he's not a dog. He's Atma. He's an eternal servant of Krishna. But in that species of life, the conscious, because of the karmic coverings we have acquired, it's practically impossible to even think about spiritual life, what to speak about spiritual life, even any higher level of intelligence than simply where is food. The animals, they can't go beyond that. Of course, dogs, you can... In India, they're just trying to learn all these things. Dog culture, that's the Western culture. Now in India they're learning, taking a dog for a walk in the morning. But I see mostly in India the dogs take the people for a walk. In the West they train them. The dog is a, but here the dog just pulls them here and there. So now you're learning dog culture, how to teach a dog tricks. And you can teach dogs how to guide blind people and how to find if someone's carrying drugs at the airport and so many things. Dogs, they're somewhat intelligent. They can be trained to some extent. But not to the extent that they can understand the subtle subject matter of what is the purpose of life. Only a human being can understand this. But actually we see that most human beings, their consciousness is not much more developed than the animals. Their intelligence may be more developed in the sense that the dog can be trained to guide a blind person. But so many intricate matters of social interaction, and just like someone may be trained as an engineer, you can train a dog to guide a blind person to cross the road, but you can't train a dog to be an engineer. So even on the platform of intelligence, the animals are much more limited than the humans. But what we're talking about is consciousness in terms of purification. So intelligence and purified consciousness, they're not necessarily the same thing. Someone may be very intelligent, but his consciousness may be very impure. And we see that some people are very intelligent, but they're not at all spiritually inclined. There's some of the famous atheists and journalists in India, like Kushwant Singh and Shobha, they're very intelligent. They can write intelligent articles, but they're atheistic. Their inclination towards God consciousness is not awakened, rather the opposite. They're against it. So, intelligence is there in the human form of life, and some intelligence is required to even to begin to think about spiritual life. A human being can think in a structured manner more than the animals, far more so. So when one starts to think in such a way, then the question may come that, well, what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose of life? And then why do we have to suffer? So these are philosophical questions. These can arise in person where there is some intelligence. And the endeavor to understand the answers to these questions and the endeavor for purification, that comes from elevated consciousness. Just like in a human being, we have the idea of what is good and what is proper and what is wrong. This idea doesn't come about in a dog. A dog can be trained, you should not pass stool inside the house. Usually they take the puppies, because I come from the Western countries, we know there's dog culture. So the puppy, when they pass stool inside, of course, keeping a dog inside the house is abominable anyway. But this is, now in India they have adopted all these things. So the puppy passes stool inside the house, you put his nose in it. Then he doesn't do it again. So he doesn't have a sense of moral right or wrong. He just knows that I'm not going to pass stool inside the house again, because if I do, I'll get my nose put in the stool. He doesn't like that. But there's no sense of right or wrong. Is it proper or improper? In the human being, the question of what is right and what is wrong can arise. So that is the beginning of elevated consciousness. Of course, many people, in the name of right, they do what is the wrong thing. They say it's right, but they don't know what is right and what is not right. Pravritiṃ ca janāna vidur āsurāha. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that those who are of demoniac consciousness, they do not know what is proper behavior and what is not. In the modern age, they consider that understanding what is right and wrong, it's arbitrary. That you just decide for yourself to a large extent. Everyone should have their own opinion. If you think it's right, you should do it. If you think it's wrong, you don't do it. But some problems arise then. Because someone may think, well, I think it is right to kill the Jews. Hitler in Germany thought it is right to kill the Jews because we are Germans and we are best and the Jews are exploiting us, so we shall kill them. He thought it was right. The rest of the world thought it's not right. Certain people from some Arabic countries thought we shall do the right and proper thing. We shall hijack some planes and fly them into the World Trade Center. They thought they were doing the right thing. And many people in the Arabic countries and the Islamic countries, they praised them. Very good. You have done a good thing. So the sense of what is right and what is wrong can be perverted. So we have to properly know what is right and wrong. But the point here is that the idea that our consciousness should be elevated, that again can arise in a human being, not in an animal. So human form of life is very valuable. And particularly, according to the Vedic Shastras, which we accept axiomatically as being of correct spiritual direction. So the Vedic literatures state that particularly birth in India is very valuable for spiritual realization, because different jivas are born in different situations according to their previous activities. One jiva at the present time is in the body of a dog, another is in the body of a tree, another is in the body of a bird, another is in the body of a human being in America, another is in the body of a human being in India. So all these different bodies have their different advantages and disadvantages. Just like, for instance, in the modern age, now we're speaking to the youth of India, so it's a very frank generation, so we shall speak openly. So in the modern age, there's much propaganda that free sex is very good. You should have free sex. So, from the objective point of view, the dog's body is a better body for free sex than the human body, because there are no rules and regulations in dog society. There's no idea that, well, you should be married and you have to work and get a job to support the children or any such thing. So we have good news for all of those who advocate free sex, that in your next life you will be born as a dog. And you can enjoy without any restrictions. So that's the thing. If you want, you get your body according to karmana daivanetrena jantur dehopapattaye. We get different bodies. One thing is according to our karma, and another thing according to the direction of God, the Supreme Lord, and the demigods. So our desire is also there. Our karma and our desire, under the guidance of the Supreme Lord, according to this, we get our next body. So someone may desire to be a leader. Same thing, someone may desire to be a leader. He has a very strong desire to be a leader. We find, it seems, elections are coming up. I saw there's some election banners here. It seems there's always elections going on. Either elections are coming up or you're just recovering from the last round. There's municipal elections and state elections and national elections, and then they shoot someone and then you have to have a by-election, and it goes on and on forever. So elections are coming up means they're all, first of all, within the party, they're vying who shall get the nomination. And then out of, I don't know, 10 or 20, one gets. So 19 are disappointed. And then the different Bajap and Congress and all the different, they're all coming, vote for Congress or vote for Bajap or whatever. But only one comes through. And then they're in, all the MLAs are there, the MPs, and then they all want to be, the members of the ruling party, they all want to be the Prime Minister, but only one can be. So many people want to be leaders, but so many are disappointed. But in your next life you may have a chance. You see, you can become a leader in a pack of dogs. Or you can become a queen bee. Or you can become the leading fish in a shoal of fish. So, different bodies have different advantages and disadvantages. Of course, like I say, you become a dog and become a leader of dogs, but the disadvantage is, well, you'll get stones thrown at you when you try to get food and so on. Or you might become a dog in America. It's a very privileged existence in America. But it's still a dog's life. It's not considered very elevated. So you can get human life in America, and that will save you a lot of problems. You won't have to get a green card to go to America. You can just be there. If you're born as a human in America, you can enjoy all the advantages, and there are disadvantages also. Just like you might be sitting in your office one day and a plane with an Arab terrorist comes through the window, and that's the end of your being an American for the time being. or you have to suffer so much tension and stress, which is concomitant with American life. And generally people in America are very sinful, so you have to go to hell after that. So there are pros and cons. Or you can be born in India and a human being and think, what happened? I just didn't get my karma quite right. I should have got born in America. Now I have to try and get a green card. And even if you go to America as an Indian, even if you're earning $1 million a month, which you won't be earning that much, but even if you are, you'll still be a second-class citizen because you're not white. That's how it is in America. But if you are born in India, there is a very great advantage which can only be appreciated by people who are of higher consciousness, which is becoming increasingly rare even in India today. Because everyone in India, they're just like Americans. They're trying their way of life, their whole consciousness is just like that. Everyone's competitive life, corporate life, all this kind of thing. But the advantage of birth in India is that in general, one has more access to understanding the higher values of life. One is more inclined to Krishna bhakti. One is exposed to this culture of Krishna bhakti, which is the actual and highest purpose of life. We understand from the Vedic literatures that there really is no other purpose, because whatever material enjoyment we get as a dog or a cat or an American or an Indian or whatever, it's all temporary and is not satisfying. And so-called material enjoyment simply leads to suffering. So in general, persons are born in India because in a previous life, they had some spiritual merit. And they're able to continue that. The culture is such that the traditional culture is that one is able to continue that. Although, as I say, nowadays, there really isn't that much difference. People are growing up without any spiritual culture, or even if there is some spiritual culture that people are exposed to, mostly it's all hodgepodge. People, there's no clear idea. People pick up a few things from some TV spiritual programs and read a few books here and there, but there's no real proper spiritual guidance or training. But nevertheless, it's generally understood that people who are in India do have some good pious activities in previous life, and therefore they can take to Krishna bhakti more easily. And we see that ISKCON is spread all over the world, and ISKCON has temples all over the world, temples of Krishna. But we see that in India, where our temples are open, more people like to come, because there's an inclination, is there, towards Krishna bhakti. In some it's stronger than others. Not so many people are very serious to take up Krishna bhakti, but many people, at least, they like to have some touch, some contact with Krishna bhakti. Whereas in other countries we also have so many temples, but it's not, generally in other countries it's not so much like in India, where if there's a temple of Krishna, then especially if there are many activities like in ISKCON temples, the classes like this and kirtans, and so there are many activities, so many people are attracted to come. So we see that even now in India, despite its present, actually degraded condition, the previous culture of India, people were very much conscious of what is punya and what is pap. They were very careful. They knew we don't want to do any pap. Even you see, when the British introduced tea drinking, they had to, people wouldn't take it at the beginning because they thought, oh no, this is wrong. This is not proper. We shouldn't take. And then the British were giving it away free and telling people it's good, it has medicinal value. And then when people were addicted to that, then they sold it to them. That was how it came. But people were very afraid of meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, because they thought this is sinful. That was there in the culture. And people would regularly hear. And then instead of watching TV at night and getting their heads filled with all horrible things, people would, every night, they would come home from the fields or whatever they were doing, and they would hear Ramayana, Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, the consciousness would be elevated. But now people are watching TV, and the consciousness becomes degraded. So the culture has changed. But actually the original Indian culture is meant for uplifting the consciousness, for making us God conscious, Krishna conscious, and preparing us to get free from birth and death by following bhakti sadhana. So that culture has been replaced by the Western corporate culture, TV watching culture, which is very degraded actually. Nowadays people don't care about drinking, and this whole boyfriends, girlfriends thing has recently been introduced. But actually it leads to so much suffering, because you fall in love and then you fall out of love, and it's very painful. Or you get married and then there's a divorce and it's very painful, and then you can never have a proper marital relationship. The whole atmosphere is such that they, just like in the Western countries, marriage is just, you know, oh, I'm getting married tomorrow. It's like saying, I'm going for an outing or something. People, just like someone would say, I'm going to Bombay tomorrow. Oh, okay. So I'm getting married tomorrow. It's like going to Bombay. You go to Bombay and you come back. So you get married and then you come out again. You get married. Oh, which marriage is that? Which one? Fourth or fifth? So there's people are suffering actually because of this modern way of life. They say you be free and liberal, but they don't know that this so-called liberality, it's actually not for our benefit. It's for our benefit to follow rules and regulations. Just like the dog, I'm saying, free sex. No rules and regulations. A dog is a dog. He has no higher culture. If we call someone a dog, is that supposed to be an insult or a compliment? It's an insult. But people are trying to, now they want to live like dogs. They want to have free sex and eat meat, and that means they want to be like dogs. If you call them a dog, they should feel, Oh, call me a dog, that's good. That means I'm eating meat and I'm having free mixing. Yes, just like a dog. You see, if you call someone a lion, you think, oh, that's because he's very brave. Oh, a lion. So that's a compliment. You say, oh, you're a dog. Oh, that's nice. But it's an insult. Because dog, why is it an insult? Because a dog is considered a very low class creature, but now we're imitating the dogs. So previously people had a consciousness that I should avoid these sinful activities because I'll get a reaction. But nowadays the propaganda, people think, oh, they don't think, that's the problem. They don't think, they become like animals. The animal doesn't think. The dog doesn't consider, should I do this or should I not do this? So similarly, we don't think. We simply see something on TV and we think, oh, okay, very good. Or you see in the newspapers and advertisements, boy and girl laughing and joking together and think, oh, that looks like fun. But actually in real life, what happens? They're laughing and joking and then it's just so much. Just for a short time, there's laughing and joking, and then after that there's... Because their relationship isn't fixed up according to Shastra Vidhi. Therefore they're both compete. Because material life means you're competing with everyone else. So in a boy-girl relationship also they're competing, and then it becomes very difficult. Instead of cooperating, they don't know how to cooperate, they're only competing. So it becomes a source of so much tension and suffering. But in the newspaper and the TV they advertise smiling and laughter, but in real life it's not like that. So modern Indians have become victims, or willing victims of the Western way of life. The previously, and still sometimes in India, the tantrics are used to do this Narabali, in which human sacrifice. You have all become willing victims. You have put your life to be. Narabali means they'll cut your head with the kardiga, that big chopper. What's it? That chopper. It's called kardiga. No? So, but you're all the modern Indian youth, you've all become, you've voluntarily made yourselves Narabali. Means your life, you're under the chopper of the materialistic civilization. Your life is spoiled. See, in the Western countries, they're saying, oh, it's very bad Narabali. We don't recommend. That's for the low class tantrics. But they're spoiling this way of life. I say Western, actually it's materialistic. Materialistic way of life. It is simply spoiling your whole existence. The human form of life is meant for understanding God and getting out of the cycle of birth and death, and especially birth in India is especially meant for that. But instead, they're going to disco and having free sex. And every wall, there's a sign, Garbhapat, their soul. What does that mean? It's going on. So people are spoiling their lives. So our message is to the whole world, chant Hare Krishna. But especially Indians, you should do. You have more opportunity. And especially the youth, you should take it up now, because if you don't, then your whole life's going to be spoiled. Of course, if you may be 40 or 50 years old, you can still take it up. Even if 40 or 50 years are already spoiled, at least whatever's left, don't spoil it anymore. But youth is a time of preparation. In youth, generally the life is molded at that time. So this time it's best, before getting involved in so many bad things which are not in our actual self-interest, it's best at this time to think clearly, what is the purpose of my life? Don't just follow the mass. People think I'm very smart, I'm dressed in a suit, I've got Nike shoes and, you know, Seiko watch and all these different things. You think I'm very smart, I'm ahead, I'm progressive, but you're not. You're just like a sheep. One goat is following the other goats, that's all. You know, they don't think. If one goat goes on the road that way, then all the others will follow. They're not thinking, because they're stupid. So in the same way, you're thinking, I'm very smart, I'm very intelligent, I'm a software engineer, and I'm earning lots of money, and I'm going to make more money, but you're stupid. You may be very intelligent in writing programs or whatever, but you're stupid because you're not thinking, what is the purpose of life? You are writing programs, you yourself are being programmed. You should wear Nike shoes, you should wear it, okay. You're like a robot, you're like an image on the computer monitor. You're just doing what other people think you should do. You should drink Pepsi, you should drink whiskey, earn a lot of money, go to parties, booze, drink, do this, do that. Only speak in English. Don't speak any other language. All these kind of things. So you're thinking you're very intelligent, but you're a fool. Because you're not thinking, what is the purpose of my life? You're simply accepting what other people are dictating to you should be the purpose of your life. And they're dictating to you, you should drink a Pepsi. Why do they want to sell you Pepsi? Is there any nutritional value in that? They show a picture of Pepsi and everyone is laughing and smiling. When you drink Pepsi, do you start to laugh and smile? So why do they want to sell you the Pepsi? Because you have money in your pocket and they want it in their pocket. That is the only reason. It's a multi-billion dollar worldwide business. It's of no benefit whatsoever to anybody to drink Pepsi. Even if you drink 10 million Pepsis, Even if you have a pipe from a tanker of Pepsi and you go and drink it all day, there will be no benefit. There can be no benefit because it is simply junk. But they want to take your money. That's all. And you're such a fool. Oh, Pepsi. Let's drink a Pepsi. So you're not, and Pepsi, and that's only one thing. Everything. What is the purpose of life? No one is thinking. So, people in general are extremely foolish in every sphere of activities. Their life is simply ruled by foolishness. And the most foolish thing about it is they think, I am very intelligent. So, our request to the youth of India is, first thing, don't be a fool like everyone else. At least start to be intelligent. Think for yourself, what am I doing with my life? They tell you, you should think for yourself. But actually, they do all the thinking for you. They give you certain options. What are the options? Pepsi or Coke. But they don't, or thumbs up or whatever. But they don't give the option that it's all garbage, don't drink any of it. They give you options. Levi jeans or, I don't know what, rough, tough, and you can, but you have to wear jeans. I mean, you couldn't wear a dhoti. But what are jeans? It's not very suitable for India, actually, because it's a hot climate. Dhoti is much better. It's cool. But people, you see, they'd rather, they wouldn't like to be seen dead in a dhoti. They'd rather be dead than be seen in a dhoti. They think it's such an embarrassment. But people are stupid. They don't think, if I wear the jeans, I'll be hot and sweating all day. But I have to wear. They don't think why. But I have to, because we're conforming to the social pressures which are placed upon us. And therefore we have to act in certain way. We feel I have to act in such a way. Otherwise, what will people think of me? So we spend our whole lives being ruled what other foolish people think of us who are also fools. So it's a fool's paradise. So we are asking you first of all to actually think for yourself. That what is the purpose, what is the real purpose of life? Now you may say, well, we've also got a program, you see, we're going to tell you do this, do that, and do the other. But we're not going to say, yes, you should just do this. We're going to ask you, first you think, you consider what is the purpose of life. Now we have a possible answer for you. Actually, we are sure that it's the answer, but we're not asking you just to take it up blindly, dogmatically, sentimentally, fanatically, or in any other way, unintelligently. As I was saying, human life is one of intelligence. Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna asks him questions. It's not that Krishna just says, I'm God, that's it, finished. Nothing more to say. He explains the science of God consciousness, which is described in Srimad Bhagavatam as Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana. It's the scientific knowledge of God. In other words, everything is explained. Of course, there are many things which are also achintya. Some things are inconceivable because we're talking about God, and God is far greater than we can fully conceive. But there are certain points which are conceivable. So we are supposed to understand knowledge of God using our intelligence, because he speaks Bhagavad Gita appealing to our intelligence. So intelligence is there, and to a certain extent that can be used to understand God. The first intelligent thing is to understand that there is God. It's extremely unintelligent to think that there is no God, although that's implicit in the modern educational system, that there was a big bang and then everything came into existence out of nothing, and then there was a primordial soup, and then some cells formed and then monkeys developed from that, and then here we are today, human beings. But this is all absolutely nonsense. And any intelligent person should understand it's nonsense. That human beings don't develop by chance from monkeys. There are thousands and millions of monkeys in the world today, and none of them give birth to anything slightly resembling human beings. Although many of the human beings give birth to human beings which resemble monkeys in their behavior. But so there may be devolution, but as far as evolution, it's ridiculous. And the idea that by a big bang, the whole order of the universe, which is the whole of science is just studying with the order within the universe, and it's so vast, the order is there at every level of matter, from the microcosm to the macrocosm, and they're saying it all comes by an explosion. It's completely ridiculous. It's just like if you want to build a house, you don't call a destruction company. There are different companies which build houses and different companies which destroy houses. So you can destroy a house with dynamite. So if you think, well, you know, why don't I want to build a house? Why don't we just get some dynamite and have an explosion? If it worked for the universe, it should work for my house too. It'd be a lot cheaper too. You don't have to. Why do we have architects? If everything is just by chance, then, you know, just get some wood and bricks and, you know, just throw it all in. And if it doesn't work the first time, well, do it a few times and, you know, sooner or later it'll be okay. But if you don't design the building absolutely correctly and build it properly, then it'll all fall down. It has to be precise, isn't it? So much intelligence and design and supervision has to be there for a little house. If in one of the corners you don't put it properly, then the whole thing will collapse. If a few bricks are misplaced, then the whole thing will collapse. And they're saying the whole universe came into being by a big bang, by a big explosion. It's ridiculous. And any intelligent person should understand that. But we think, oh, it's very intelligent. You see, I wrote my exam. Absolutely bizarre, mad. What they're calling intelligence. So any person who's a little bit sane should understand that the whole modern educational system is completely bogus. They're just teaching us all ridiculous things, and the whole aim and object is to make us a brainwashed puppet. That you should get a job and, like the dog, you pat it on the head and give them a little something to eat. So like that, you get a job and they give you a little money, be a good boy, pat them on the head, and you get some money and you can do what you like with it, so you think. But what can you do? You're just getting some money and working for someone who's making so much more money, and the world is going on like that. You're just a tiny little screw in a big economic machine which is exploiting them, that's all. And they make you work. We say work like an ass, but in the modern age, you see, the asses, they also get some recreation, they get some time for relaxation. But in the modern life, if you have a so-called good job, you here, but I'm earning 10,000 rupees a month. You're earning 10,000 and you don't have time to eat even. I've seen people, they get something, some sandwich or something, get something, it's brought to them in the work, and they're going, and they're not even aware that they're eating. They're not even conscious. They're eating with their left, but they're still going on the computer, and they're not even conscious that they're eating. They don't have time to think even. They don't even have time to taste the food. It's just, it's a bodily function. And this is a good job. We're fools. So our request is, don't be a fool. Think. Think. What are you doing with your life? What is the purpose of life? Why should I be like this? Why should I go down the same track that everybody else is going down? You should be a success. What is the meaning of success? You work. Success means you have to work all your life. Tremendous working. That's what they call being a success. And you earn some money. So you can drive to work in a CLO car. That's your success. instead of going on a bus. That's your success. And then you die, and then what? And then you get your karmic reaction. You become an animal. You'll get some relief. It means you'll become a donkey. You won't have to work so hard. That's your relief. Or maybe you can have more relaxation. You can become a bear. Then you can sleep 6 months. You can relax after a lifetime of hard work. But that's not being a success. I mean, even from the material point of view, it's a big hoax that your life is successful if you're working, working, working. They say you're a success because you're earning money and it's socially respectable. But what is the use of a life in which you work so hard? You may see, we're talking about divorce. One reason to get divorced is because anyway, the wives, they never see their husbands. The wife is working, the husband is working, and then, you know, they don't even know each other hardly. They don't see each other hardly. Then when they see each other, they're both full of so much tension from working so much that they fight. And then they think, what's the use? You know, I don't see my wife. Whenever I see her, we fight. So, you know, what's the use? Get divorced. This is going on. So what's the use of such a life? Even from the material point of view, it's horrible. And spiritually, then your whole life is spoiled because you have no elevated consciousness. You don't think, what is the purpose of life? What is my relationship with God? How to get free from repeated birth and death? Such questions never come in our minds. There's no room in our minds because we're just filling it up with all kinds of information about whatever it is, engineering or medicine or whatever it may be. So our brain is simply full of information which is ultimately of no benefit to us. And we call this a success. So we should think, what does it mean to be a success? Actually, real success, what should that mean? That means we should have a happy life, isn't it? What's the use of earning millions of dollars if you're miserable? If you're suffering from depression and you have no actual friends? There are so many millionaires in America. More than a million millionaires. Dollar millionaires. It's not such a big thing in America. One fairly big house will cost you $500,000 or something. But, you know, it doesn't mean they're happy. You don't see them. Only you see the imagination is them. If I get money, I'll be happy. But you see so many millionaires, they're not any happier than anyone else. So, there's this big myth in modern society, money will make you happy. It's a myth, it's not true. Of course, we need money for... need money for family maintenance, if we have a family, eating, paying the rent, and all this kind of thing. But beyond that, how much can money do for you? It doesn't bring happiness. It's a big myth. So, we should consider, actually, how can we really get happiness? So then there are different ideas. By enjoying, see, the idea we'll get money, then we can be happy. The idea is that we will enjoy ourselves, we'll enjoy our senses. You see, if I can eat nice food, if I can have a beautiful girlfriend, this is sense enjoyment. Or if I can have nice clothes, expensive clothes, we think that is pleasing. The idea that will be pleasing to me, but actually, it doesn't bring pleasure. It's not a fact that these things bring pleasure. So then we may think, all right, well, I'll just lead a simple family life. I'll take pleasure in my family. But that doesn't bring full satisfaction for two reasons. One reason is that to satisfy the family, then you have to do some miserable job. You have to bring money. That's one thing. And then another thing is they're very difficult to satisfy because no one's satisfied, especially in the modern age. People always want more and more and more. Another thing is, well, you may be settled in your family life, but then you have to die anyway. You can't, it's not a permanent situation, and you have to suffer old age, disease, death, anxiety, so many different miseries. So then we may think, all right, let me do good for others. Let me, which come into different, what are supposed to be higher levels of consciousness. Let me do good for others. Let me open a hospital or a school or feed the poor or something. Let me do good for others. But that's also extremely limited. Just like you can feed the poor and they'll be hungry again very soon. And you feed the poor and the money they saved from that they would have spent on a meal, they'll spend on this daru. They'll drink some booze and they'll get drunk. And so you didn't really help them. You helped them to become more degraded, actually, in that case. Or even if you think, well, I'll help some people, you may help a few people materially, but just like, for instance, you might help a few people to get more money, but that won't necessarily make them happy, getting more money. But even if you can help a few people, you can't help all the people who are suffering materially. For instance, you may help a few poor people, just like Mother Teresa is famous for her work among the poor in Calcutta, but there are still lakhs of poor people living on the street in Calcutta for all of Mother Teresa's efforts. She could only help very few people, if at all she helped them. But you see, even if you help them, then they still have to die, and then they have to get born again and suffer old age, disease and death. So really we can't really help people very much at all on the material platform. So then we have to come to the progressively higher levels of thinking, what is the best thing to do with my life, what is the higher level of consciousness. So then we come to spiritual consciousness, in which we understand we're not the body. So anyway, the endeavor to enjoy the body by wearing nice clothes and eating nice food and having girlfriends or boyfriends and all this thing. So when we come to spiritual consciousness, we understand that actually this is far more elevated than this endeavor to enjoy the body, which the dog is also doing. This idea, I will dress in nice clothes, it's the same consciousness as that of the dog who thinks, I must make myself attractive. Or I must... the idea that I'll dress in nice clothes. Why? So it'll be appealing to the opposite sex. So it's the same thing as the dog, actually. So there's the sensual platform, and then we can come higher than that to the altruistic platform, but ultimately we can't help anybody on the material platform. Yeah. We ourselves are suffering. We're thinking I'll help others, but we ourselves are suffering. We have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. So really, we have to come to the platform of spiritual consciousness by which we understand that beyond this whole material existence, which is simply full of birth and death and suffering in various ways, there is spiritual existence. Beyond the body, beyond birth and death. And that our real self-interest lies in coming to the platform of spiritual consciousness. And even if we want to help others, we should help them by bringing them up to the platform of spiritual consciousness, which ultimately means Krishna consciousness. But here we're just giving a general message to the youth of India that you have a good spiritual opportunity to get free from birth and death. So you should think, what is the purpose of our life? We shouldn't simply blindly follow what others are doing and thinking and saying and telling us how we should live. But we should live our lives according to the higher level of understanding. So first we should consider, what am I doing with my life? What is the best thing I can do with my life? In the best way that can be beneficial for me in the best way, and can be beneficial for others in the best way. We should consider these things. So of course, that we can't ascertain by ourselves. Because if we're to understand what is that, we ourselves are in lower consciousness too, so to understand what is coming from the platform of higher consciousness, we need some guidance and we need some help. So that we are offering training and guidance in spiritual understanding, which, as I say, ultimately that means Krishna consciousness. We're simply asking you, stop, think, have a look, see what cause your life is going in, and we're asking you to use your intelligence to understand the highest purpose of life. So you look and you see. And we are confident, because we have come through this path ourselves, we are confident that if you are actually sincere and actually intelligent, that certainly you will accept the understanding of Bhagavad Gita as it is, as being the highest goal of life. You can look and see and compare. If you like, you can go. There are so many different so-called spiritual groups. You can look and see. But as far as we are concerned, and we are in good company, we're in the company of great acharyas, such as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramanuja Acharya, Madhva Acharya, Vallabha Acharya. As far as these great acharyas are concerned, and we have in the modern age the representative of these great acharyas, Srila Prabhupada. So we are taking guidance from these great self-realized personalities who all give the same message, that human life is not meant for living like a dog. Human life is meant for understanding the highest truth, who is Krishna. So you can take it from us. We won't present it dogmatically, but we will present it systematically. We expect those who are coming to understand this to try to understand it intelligently, to use your intelligence. At the same time, we should understand that intelligence also has its limits, and we should understand, even though we're appealing to your intelligence, real intelligence begins when we understand that actually our intelligence is very limited. We are very, very, very tiny living beings within a vast universe. We don't know where we come from or what our purpose of life is. So we should understand that there are limits to our intelligence, and we actually have very little knowledge, even materially. We don't really know even all the knowledge of science put together, we really don't know very much about the universe. There are many questions which science hasn't answered, apart from big, big questions like how the universe has come into being, questions like why do we have to sleep? They don't know. So there are so many things we don't know. So real intelligence begins with humility, actually. Instead of thinking, I'm great, you see, I'm so educated, I'm so intelligent. But when one understands that, you know, I really don't know what the purpose of life is. When we have that kind of intelligence to understand that really I don't know that much, that brings humility. And then we can begin to learn. We can begin to learn what is on the platform of higher consciousness. But if we're always thinking, yeah, I know so much, and yeah, you know, I read a few books, and I know everything about spiritual life, then we can't know. So humility is required. So our intelligence must be applied, but at the same time, we shouldn't be proud thinking that I'm very educated and this and that. But should understand. I'm a very, very tiny living being. So let me pray to God that He can give me some guidance to understand what is the actual and correct path. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this?
There are many spiritual groups
There are many spiritual groups in India which misguide Indian youth.
That's why people are the parents and all the people, they think that the spiritual groups they are all.
Many people think that all the spiritual groups are all bogus. Yeah. But it doesn't mean they're all bogus. I thought like that too, actually. I was going to school in England, and then I must have been, 16 years old, and my best friend at school showed me some books from ISKCON, Prabhupada's books. I remember there were three books, and on top was Sri Ishopanishad. It's a very old edition. I can recognize that now. And he showed them to me, and he wanted me to look at them, and I said, I don't want to look. These Indian gurus, they're all bogus. I don't have anything to do with it. He was disappointed. But later I came to find out that actually this is not bogus. But that was my impression. We used to hear about this. So there was, you don't even know those things. So there are a few gurus, they're so bogus. I mean, you meet their followers and they're so useless that... I thought that, well, material life, that's useless. But if this is spiritual life, it's even more useless. So I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I understood that material life was bad, but I thought this so-called spiritual life, that's even worse. So I don't have anything to do with this. Luckily, later, Krishna gave me another chance. So that is there. There are so many cheaters, but... But it's not only that because parents don't want their children to go to spiritual groups. It's also because the parents want their children to be paka materialists. So they don't want them actually to be spiritual. The parents themselves, they can't distinguish between what's a bona fide spiritual group and what's not. But they don't want they don't want their children actually to become in spiritual consciousness. So anyway, there are different kinds of parents also. But it's true, there are many cheating groups in the name of spiritual life. We should be careful. Bahavo Gurave Santi Shisha Vittapaharaka Durlabha Satguru Devi Shishas Klesha Paharaka. This is said that Lord Shiva saying to Parvati that there are many gurus who are very expert in taking away the money of their disciples. But it's difficult to find a real guru who can take away the klesha or the... Anyway, you understand the word. What are the difficulties of the disciples?
How should I differ between this life and the spiritual?
How to make the combination? Is that
how to
differentiate? That's the word, yeah. Between material life and spiritual life. Well, basically, spiritual life, religious life. Well, there's spiritual life, there's religious life, and there's material life. Now, religious life in many cases can be materialistic also. Just like I was saying, Narabali. So that's also religious. But it's not spiritual. Narabali is done because people, they're thinking they'll get Devi's blessings. We don't recommend it. So that is religious. Much of what is religious is actually not spiritual, because the aim is that I will go to a temple, I will get the blessings, and that will improve my material life. We pray, give me more money, improve my health problem, help my son to pass his exam. So it's actually material. So that's why I changed the question to spiritual life and material life. Because religious life in most cases is also material. Even you'll find many people, women especially, they're fasting one day a week. But it's all for some material motive. So the motive is what makes the difference. Of course, one also needs to be trained in spiritual life. You may think, well, I'm doing spiritual life, but if it's according to your imagination, then it's not spiritual. Ultimately, spiritual life means to act for the satisfaction of Krishna. And material life means to act for my own satisfaction. So spiritual life means to understand that I am Atma and my position is Krishna Das. Krishna is Paramatma, Bhagavan. I am his servant. So spiritual life means to act for the pleasure of Krishna. So sometimes, to people who are not trained, spiritual life can look like material life. And material life can look like spiritual life. So someone who's not trained, they think, oh, you see devotees of Krishna, they're also building a big temple. So that's also material, it's also bricks. But the motive is to satisfy Krishna. Even they may collect a lot of money, but the aim should be to satisfy Krishna. That devotees of Krishna, they're asking people, you give some donation. But that money will be used for serving the deity, organizing festivals, distributing prasad, holding programs like this. You see, now we're going to distribute prasadam. So someone has collected some donation to make this possible. So you think, oh, collecting money, that's material. But no, because that will be used for Krishna's service, then that is spiritual. Now on the other hand, someone may be going to the temple and praying, but that may look like it's spiritual, but actually it's material. Because their motive is how I will improve my material life. I will get the blessing of God to improve my material life. Therefore, real spiritual life begins with knowledge of differentiation between matter and spirit. That is the beginning of spiritual life. Therefore, we ask people, take this Bhagavad Gita as it is, by which it is clearly delineated according to Krishna's instructions. And there can be no better instructions than those of Krishna. What is the difference between spirit and matter? And how to act on the spiritual platform? The whole of Bhagavad Gita is often misunderstood. But Krishna was simply teaching Arjuna how to act on the spiritual platform. How to come above the material platform and act on the spiritual platform. That is the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Do you have this book? You don't have this? Please take. First time coming. So you can take, we have in Gujarati, Hindi, whichever language you prefer. You can take this. So please take it. Then you can understand these things clearly. Yeah.
So if all the souls go through
the cycle of life and death, they have to get birth, they
have to die again. If this is going through the cycle, again and again, then what objective does he give to the soul alive?
Why is that? What? I didn't
hear. What objective does God give
to
the soul alive? Because
no, just one thing. This soul is alive. Oh, there's a purpose, yeah. Now, why are these souls taking birth again and again in the material world? Well, the purpose is because we have the desire to enjoy our senses. Our real purpose of life as spiritual living beings should be to live in the spiritual world with Krishna. But because we have chosen to reject that, we are in the material world and we are trying to... Because the nature of the living being is to enjoy. And actually we can enjoy when we are in association with Krishna, who is the reservoir of pleasure. But due to a perverted desire, we have chosen to try to enjoy separately from Krishna. So therefore in every species of life, we see the attempt is there to enjoy. Human beings are attempting to enjoy, the dogs are trying to enjoy. Even the plants, in the plant form of life, the consciousness is not very developed, but the plant tries to grow towards the light, isn't it? Because that for the plant is his enjoyment. So the purpose of life is to enjoy, but in the conditioned life, in material life, we are suffering far more than we're enjoying. So really we should take to spiritual life and come to the platform of real enjoyment on the spiritual platform, Krishna consciousness.
think that we have to set the objective of our life, then there must be some objective which he has sent us to the...
No, we have made our own program separate from Krishna. And he has given us the opportunity. Okay, you want to try and enjoy in this material life? Try, but you won't be happy. But our real objective should be to make our plans in line with the plans of Krishna. It's not that everyone is in the material world according to divine will. Rather, we have gone against the divine will. Therefore, there's so much confusion in the material world. Because we don't know what our actual objective is. And we are trying to fulfill an objective which can never satisfy us, which is